outdoors, coming on the airwaves, coming your way.
Hey now, we're outside indoors, beat on a buck on a snowy day.
Hey now, we're inside outdoors, baiting a hook and anchors away.
Baiting a hook and anchors away.
Baiting a hook and anchors away.
Inside Outdoors is brought to you from the beautiful rolling hills, forests, and lakes of southern Indiana. Produced in Bloomington and brought to you live every Saturday morning at 7 a.m. right here on your local community radio station, WFHB. Inside Outdoors features hosts Don Jordan, Buddy Bill Moser, and Rich Reardon, and gives you everything you need to know about the outdoors surrounding our local community, our state, and around our nation. With fishing, hunting, local and national outdoor news, the environment, natural resources, safety, issues in our community, and just down-home family fun, our goal is to inspire how to be a good steward of our precious natural resources. You can call into our show at 812-323-1200 and ask a question or tell us what's on your mind. So sit right back, get a cup of coffee, journey with us into the lakes and woods, and find out what our natural resources have to offer. If you miss the show, you can listen online at WFHB.org. Just go to the public affairs listing, and you'll find a podcast of our show at Inside Outdoors. This is WFHB Bloomington, Indiana, volunteer-powered community radio at 91.3 FM for South Central Indiana, also 98.1 in Bloomington, 100.7 in Brown County, 106.3 in Ellettsville, and online at WFHB.org. Hey, good morning. This is Inside Outdoors. I'm here with Alan Brandenburg. Alan, how you doing?
Hey, guys. Hope everybody is well. Hope things are going good for you this weekend. Summer is moving right along. We are zipping close to September. Kids back to school, starting kids sports. There's people all over the lake as I'm looking out the window here. It's that time of year.
Yeah.
Tomatoes are great.
I just want to tell folks we're still doing this by Zoom again, so don't call in. Hate to say that because we were there for a few weeks, but... We're not anymore until some things calm down, and it's not looking all that great about calming down for the moment, but we'll see what happens as things move forward here. Hopefully we'll be back by September. So,
well, that's a tough situation where the kids have been back to school for maybe a week now, mm-hmm. and already we're getting cancellation of school functions all over the state of Indiana within a week. So we've got sports teams that are completely quarantined and shut down. It didn't take very long before this just got out of hand here, and it's probably not going to get a lot better very quickly.
No, and I heard something about possibility of Moderna and what was the other one that we might be looking at having to get some booster shots?
Just approved today. I saw the data a couple of days ago and knew this was coming. Pfizer, Moderna. I'm not sure, but what J&J isn't included in that as well. 8 months after your second shot or your last shot, actually is what the release says.
Right.
8 months after your last shot, they're recommending boosters for everyone, not just people with poor immune systems. So we're all looking at boosters. Not unusual when you look at influenza. Mm-hmm. We get, you know, not exactly, but close to that. We get a booster almost every year. There's a new strain. We get a new shot every year. It won't be any different with this.
Now, is this going to be still a free thing? Are they still have enough to go around? I just kind of wonder.
Yeah, we've got plenty of vaccine just simply because, you know, half of America didn't take the first one. So, mm-hmm. You know, we have plenty of vaccine to go around, and the production rate and the supply chain is in pretty good shape here in America. Now, if substantial doses get shipped out to other countries, you know, that could change things, you know, but I think that's unlikely to have an effect on you and I and our friends and family here, you know, where we really don't have a concentration of high population. So I think we're going to be okay with the number of vaccines that are available to us. So I wouldn't worry about that.
Yeah. Well, considering half the country, they were planning on the whole country and a lot of people didn't get it. So I guess exactly there would be plenty.
Exactly. But. So this is all going in the wrong direction. You know, it's not good. This new variant, the more it gets a chance to replicate inside people who have not been vaccinated, the higher the likelihood of that variant turning into neither an even more dangerous variant increases. So, you know, none of this is good. You know, we just, if you haven't got your vaccine, absolutely no reason not to. Go get vaccinated, folks. You're not going to be happy if you're one of the ones who gets this disease. It's not fun.
Well, one of my friends up in Michigan has been vaccinated and he tested positive. I've heard of two that have done that, and he's not feeling too well, but nothing that bad. And I saw some very interesting stats. There was something like in Texas, there was like 1,000 or so a day, and the total for vaccinated people was like 250.
Yeah.
And
those are just tests. Those aren't people who are being hospitalized. Those are just test results. We're not seeing anyone vaccinated go to the hospital with this.
Right.
On the other hand, you have a relatively high probability of going to the hospital and potentially even dying if you do not have a vaccine. So it's just not worth the risk. It's just not worth the risk.
Yeah.
Wait, I was looking at one of the outdoor Indiana sites recently, and I think Don had brought this up previously, and I keep hearing more and more about these early hunting permits for deer, and how the state goes about selecting the individuals for these selected site permits. A lot of lack of clarity around how the state is doing that. I kind of, before we got on here today, looked through as much of the state websites as I could to find out how they do it. And I think that was one of the comments that one of the deer hunters had made, was how in the world does the state come up with assigning people on this lottery system these early hunting date for these reservations? And they were further stating on their comment that every year they've applied for something that was close to their house and they've gotten approved for something that was far, far away from them. Mm-hmm. And they were asking, you know, how does the state do this? You know, how many people apply versus how many get approved? That really is a mystery, as this individual, you know, made reference to on their Facebook posting. When you look at the state website, it says that it's a computer-generated algorithm that comes up with who gets the hunting permits and where. And I assume that they take into consideration the local population that's available in terms of deer to be harvested, the population of potential hunters, and all of that. But there's not a lot of clarity around it. It seems to be a lot of unhappiness around the procurement of these early reservation permits. And it's causing some problems. I'm not sure why the DNR isn't a little bit more forthcoming about that. I know we've talked in the past even after times when we've had DNR representatives on the show, about, you know, how many hunters do we have? How many people apply for these, and how many actually get them? That's a number that for some reason or another, the DNR just does not want to let us know. And I'm just not sure that's the best policy at this point going forward.
Well, I didn't even hear that there was going to be a change. What did they, is it change actually an extra season, or is it just allowing it to be a little earlier? I'm not real sure.
It's the, prescribed harvesting at special locations, and they have the lottery for it to get the extra deer, basically.
Right.
There's a name for it. I can't remember what it is now. But there's a lot of online complaints about how that's going about. There's no transparency. And when those people who've applied for a certain site, permit for that certain site, they don't get it. They get some that's not close to their home.
Right.
And there seems to be a fair amount of comments about that online. I was just curious, so I looked it up myself. And he's right. There isn't a lot of transparency about how that happens. Not sure that's the best policy for the DNR or for the hunters. While I was doing that, I was going through a bunch of different data. One of them led me to a late 2019 article from the Chicago Tribune. It's interesting that I always learn more about Indiana from Chicago and Louisville and all the other state newspapers besides ours, including their television stations as well. But it was saying that at that time, the hunting permit numbers in Indiana had been going from north of a half a million to barely over 400,000. That was a few years ago. That was, I think the last year it recorded, that was 2016. And they were talking about the precipitous drop in permits. And of course, Indiana, as are most states, our wildlife and our parks and recreation are, you know, essentially self-funded. The average taxpayer spends nothing for it through their taxes. If you don't use those facilities or buy those permits, that's the only money that goes into them. So with reduced usage fees, becomes reduced money for upkeep and maintaining all of those things that hunters, fishermen, and outdoors people in Indiana, you know, have come accustomed to over many years. A lot of it's an age thing, a generational thing, but they also cite really lack of access as the main reason. There are a number of programs to engage young children into hunting and fishing, and a lot of programs that are mentored programs to get the kids involved. Whereas normally in the past, they might have been farm kids who got involved, you know, normally, because that's where they lived. Same thing with even suburban kids. They would go with their grandparents. And they're stating that, you know, what we all know and we talk about on this program a lot is that so much of the problem is just lack of access, lack of habitat, lack of places to go, lack of wildlife when you get there. So it's becoming a topic of discussion online a lot more than I've seen. I know we've been aware of it, you know, on this program for many years, decades probably. But we're starting to see that echoed now out in social media. And it will be interesting to see if the DNR and the folks in the state who are responsible for these programs and these properties, you know, have a plan to kind of overcome that. I mean, we're looking at a self-sustaining decrepitude of these assets around the state if there isn't some other way to support them other than declining usage fees. So, you know, what looks bad gets even worse because there's less use, and that precipitates less money, which is what drives all of it.
Well, I'm looking at the hunting and trapping seasons from the DNR for 2021 and 22. It says that special antlerless is closed. So,
yeah.
And except for, I guess, in these reduction zones, which will start up on September 15th.
Yeah, and I think the sign-up period's like the 15th or the 30th of August.
Yeah.
And for that, and that's what I was referring to, and I think that's what the online comments have been referring to, is that special deer session. So I assume that those are like a bonus overpopulation type selection, and it may very well be that someone who's signing up for a special site near their house where they live, so that's not so far away, maybe there just aren't that much of a surplus. Maybe there isn't that much of a surplus, and maybe that's why these people aren't getting things close to the house. It certainly would be helpful for the DNR to come out and explain that in a way that, you know, doesn't propagate what's going on behind the scenes here. No transparency. You know, I always get pushed somewhere far away. Why is that? What criteria are they using? And none of that really is available anywhere that I looked.
Yeah. Well, I think it's kind of early to start talking about this, but I'll give some dates here. For hunting wild turkey, that's starting in October, and I guess October is coming up pretty quick again.
It is indeed.
The fall archery goes for 2 months, October through basically all October and all December. It's actually October 1st through 31st, and then December 4th through January 2nd. So fall archery. Fall firearm is October 20th. Through October 31st, so only about a week of that. So, and you can take one bird of either sex per hunter, and one archery or firearm, and then in the youth season, that's only in the spring, so you don't have to worry about that. But I guess you have to know your turkey if you're gonna hunt them, because I'm not sure that it's all that easy to tell their sex unless they're strutting around with their full feathers out and stuff.
Right.
But anyway, you're allowed to take one of each.
Well, I'm not all that good at instant identification. I would just say, of all the things that concern me, I have about 80 acres here. Mm-hmm. About 2/3 of it, you know, is probably wooded with open fields the rest. I have some government ground next to me. We got the lake out front. It's not like I don't have habitat. The thing that concerns me most and is most noticeable is the reduction of wild turkey running around my place. Mm-hmm. In past years, there have been, you know, anywhere from 20 to 50, you know, walking around the backfield where the woods come together. I've seen zero wild turkeys on my property this year, zero. Hmm. So the numbers just seem to be precipitously dropping for some reason or another. And some of it may just be predatory competition. I came in the gate yesterday, and there was a huge red fox run across the driveway. So, you know, I have no doubt that plays a part of it. Mm-hmm. But it's pretty noticeable. Of all the things that I miss on my land here, the turkey are probably the one thing that I could say, wow, we went from having herds of, you know, flocks of turkey here walking around to like zero.
Right.
It's a little concerning, just a little bit concerning to me.
Speaking of foxes, I saw in Don's Inside Outdoors on Facebook, he had a picture of a fox who had taken a rabbit and then a big old bald eagle came down and took the fox and the rabbit away.
I saw that. That's called top of the food chain, Rich.
No kidding. It said something about, you know, taking a rabbit from a fox, but it looks, in these pictures, it's got the fox flying away with both of them, so.
Yeah, I was going to say, the easiest way to get the rabbit may just be to take the fox, because it's in his mouth, so yeah. That's funny.
Yeah.
That is so funny.
Do you see any turkey over by the spillway? Where, remember, we both said we've seen a flock for years living over there, but I haven't seen
that either. That, in fact, is the last turkey I saw, which was... this spring, and they were crossing, you know, what they call Dam Road, the elevated portion as you come south out of the dam, mm-hmm. Before you go down into the bottom area,
right
behind the dam. That's where the last two or three that I saw. That was this spring, and I haven't seen them since. But then. I haven't been going that way because the construction's so terrible right there at that intersection coming out on 37 there. That's got to bother you, too.
Yep.
Coming out from over there.
Well, let me see. I didn't really say this yet, but the lake is back to normal pool at 538, which is kind of interesting because you said there was quite a bit of rain over the weekend.
Yep. We had an inch and a half yesterday. I was in town doing... some errands, didn't get a drop of rain.
Yeah.
Not so much as a mist. When I got home, there were puddles from the driveway. And Mrs. B said that she had just heard on the news we had just gotten an inch and a half of rain on Lake Monroe. So
weird. Because I didn't get much. I'm on the other side down here. And
right.
We didn't, you know, it rained, but it didn't seem like it was that much.
Yeah, I couldn't believe the puddles, you know, that were in the driveway. I expected we might get a little bit of a sprinkle, but nothing like an inch and a half. So,
right.
But it was dry enough that, you know, other than the puddles, you know, and the potholes in my driveway, there was no water laying around anywhere. It's been soaked up pretty quickly by the dirt. I suspect there's probably not very much tailing off into the lake.
Well, and the temperature is right around 80 degrees, so I'm sure fishing is a little bit slow now, except for in the deeper water areas. But anyway, that's that.
I haven't seen anybody out here, Rich. I'm looking out there now, and you know, in the Fairfax Basin, there's usually, if anybody's fishing, they're fishing in that basin over there, or I can see them zipping across the lake on the way to Catfish Cove to see if they have any luck over there. There's not a soul out on the lake that's fishing. There's a few boats out there, you know, zipping around, pleasure boats, but I see nobody fishing.
Well, and I saw something somewhere. I've been trying to find it for a couple of days again, but apparently they've stocked some more fish in the lake.
I saw that,
and I cannot find what it was or where it was. But so I shouldn't have even brought it up because I don't really know. But
well, no, I did see the same thing, and it was that was a lot of fish.
Yeah, it was.
All the different Indiana reservoirs. Now, having said that, that may have been just a public announcement of the recap that Don gave a few weeks ago about the stocking that was going on at Monroe. The numbers looked about like that he was talking about. So I suspect that's what it was. You know, you never know what, you know, when all this stuff goes on. They're just an announcement that it took place and how much and all that, you know, along the same lines, DNR police blotter, you know, more bodies washing up, more people drowning, more kids getting hurt on ATVs. Part of the ritual of summer in the wild, the unfortunate part, but, it continues, and, it's pretty disappointing to see, you know, folks who have been fishing or for one reason or another near the water, and then they end up being fished out, you know, unresponsive or dead, you know, sometime later. It's pretty, pretty sad.
Yeah.
A lot of it going on out there from all the way up near Calumet and, you know, Gary, all the way down to the Ohio River. I mean, it's just everywhere. And, some of it has to do with, alcohol use and people fishing and swimming and boating. Some of it not though. So, be careful out there, folks. It's, you know, it's dangerous and, it requires, your best efforts to stay on top of, this side of the dirt with us.
Yeah. Well, we always talk about safety and, you know, a lot of times you see that there's a lack of putting a, you know, on your vest and, yeah, and that kind of thing. Yeah. See, you just got to realize that it can happen at any time, especially with people driving around real fast on the lake and with big wakes and stuff, if you're on a, yeah, depending on the kind of boat you're on, you know.
Well, it's very rough out on the lake. I mean, from Thursday afternoon till Monday morning, the lake is just so choppy and so rough. Mm-hmm. You know, even someone out swimming without a life preserver on, you know, could run into trouble, especially if you had a couple drinks, you're out there. The water is warm enough that you're not going to cool yourself down very quickly. It would be easy to get overheated in 85 degree water. Mm-hmm. And you're already sweating. You're already hot. It would be very easy, for the body to just, start to shut down. And when that happens, you know, if you don't have a life preserver on, you know, we don't float very well.
No.
Under those circumstances.
Yeah. And then of course you've got various places in the lake where they're submerged, stumps and other things. So you got to be careful when you're just, you know, swimming in the lake or anything you're doing really. So anyway, be careful out there.
It's so, so true. It's just so true. What have you been doing, Rich? I haven't talked to you for a while. You've been out doing anything outdoors in the last couple of weeks? We haven't talked much.
Not too much. It was so hot a couple of weeks ago that, you know, as soon as it got cool that one weekend, I went camping, but I haven't done much outside.
Other than that was the last we talked about, I think, yeah.
Cleaning up the yard and stuff. One interesting thing is we have milkweed. It's kind of a vine in a way, and it comes up right from under our deck, and we've never, I guess it keeps coming back every year, but we let it kind of grow up for a while on the deck on the side, because it tends to attract monarchs, and people know a lot about that, but I've been seeing some good caterpillars and on that, and we've also been running into some real big, beautiful moths.
Yeah.
I found one the other day. It was probably, the wingspan was 3 or 4 inches, and it was green with that fuzzy.
Oh, those are Lunas, yeah.
Lunas, yeah. And yeah.
They're gorgeous.
Gorgeous, gorgeous thing, you know.
Yeah.
And I've seen a lot of smaller moths just lately. I don't know, maybe because it's gotten a little cooler. But the population of monarch butterflies has, you know, decreased.
Yeah.
And so if you can, you know, find a way to have some of that milkweed around, that is something that they really are attracted to, and it helps to restore the population decline.
Yeah.
I guess it's just for some reason they like to lay their eggs on it. So you always see the caterpillars, and those are those really cool looking striped caterpillars, you know?
Yeah. Well, the milkweed, I remember when I was a kid, we used to just walk around in town, and there'd be lots where people just were side lots where people didn't mow them. There'd be milkweed all over the place. And of course, in the late summer, they'll start to dry out and they'll get puffy and they'll blow up that white fluffy stuff all over the place.
Right.
And you know, I just don't see much of that around here. We don't have a lot that we don't mow. We bale most of the fields, mm-hmm. For hay. So we don't have a lot that we don't bale. And we tried to plant some milkweed, to kind of, mixed results. We didn't really get, you know, much milkweed, that we let grow. I think the best solution for that is just have places where you don't mow very much.
Right.
There's probably so much milkweed seed from past decades, that if you don't mow it, it'll just start coming up again. But we've not had a lot of luck trying to plant, milkweed to get that very thing started.
Well, we have it, like I said, on our porch, and towards when it starts getting to the point where it's going to, you know, where the seeds are going to come out, then you can kind of trim that away, and then you're not really having that trouble. You want some of it to happen, but anyway, I've definitely seen the caterpillars and it won't be long before we'll be seeing some larvae, and that's kind of exciting. It's always fun to see them come around too. They just seem to be attracted to it.
For sure. And for a few years now, we've had some monarchs that for some reason they're like that green plastic colored fence that Mrs. B puts around her garden. Mm-hmm. The caterpillars like that for some reason or another, and you'll see little cocoons develop hanging from them. It's usually
the cocoons around, are usually green.
Yeah.
It may just be like a camouflage thing.
It may very well be. I hadn't thought of that. That's probably it. But this has been a big year for butterflies. We've got butterflies all over the place.
Yeah, I know. I've seen a lot.
Yeah. Same with the moss. And you know, partly, I can't remember it. I think they eat gnats. Mm-hmm. And this is a giant gnat year. We've got a light in the breezeway, that Mrs. B keeps on at nighttime. Mm-hmm. And in the morning, there'll be millions of little gnats piled up under the light. And now that we're starting to have some late season frogs here, the frogs sit under it and kind of wait for the gnats to fall down for it,
right.
To eat. And usually the Luna moss, we always see on the bug zapper out at the barn. I usually have a bug zapper out there where I walk in into the barn, and there's almost every year there's a Luna moth on it. So they must eat those fungus gnats. That's the only thing I can think of.
Right. We've got one of those black light things that seems to does a good job of keeping mosquitoes down and stuff right around our deck. So
yeah. Well, the mosquitoes have been terrible. I've gotten mosquito bites that I haven't had in a lot of years. I'll tell you what I have not had, and I mentioned this probably a few weeks ago, but I have not, you know, knock on wood here, not had a single tick on me from anywhere. That's highly unusual. I mean, I live in the middle of the woods. I mean, our house is completely surrounded.
Yeah.
There's plenty of deer roaming through the woods, high grass. Usually I'll get two or three ticks every year, every day, walking to the barn and back. Mm-hmm. This year, not a single tick.
Interesting.
I have to believe that late frost we had must have done something to deter them, because I just haven't seen any ticks at all. I don't know if anybody's had any different experience, but it's pretty interesting to me, because that ticks are a way of life out here. I think we've all had Rocky Mountain spotted fever here and taking medicine for it over the years. This year, none, no ticks at all.
Well, I can't say we've been without them, but it hasn't been as much, I think, as I remembered, like even last year. But boy, when it was hot, there was chiggers and all kinds of stuff biting. You couldn't even go outside without getting some. And that seems to slow down too with the cooler weather we've had in the last week or two.
Yeah, the weeks that was really hot, we had horse flies that were as big as, you know, half dollars.
Yeah.
And they were swarming, biting you. They were driving me crazy. Mm-hmm. Every time I'd get out, car started up, roll the windows down, start driving down the road to the driveway to the road. There'd be a couple horse flies flying the car, and they'd be with me the rest of the day. So it's, I haven't seen horse flies since we had the farm.
Yeah.
So that must mean the deer are repopulating the area fairly well, because the black flies, the horse flies are just numerous around here right now.
Well, I will tell you, we discovered this a couple of years ago, but we were given some of this Amish salve, chickweed salve. I don't know if you've ever had
chickweed,
any of this stuff.
Yeah, I've heard of that, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. It smelled pretty bad, and I think it was because it was probably 10 years old or something when we got given it. But I found out some really interesting uses for it. For one, it is a totally organic way of dealing it. I mean, it's got, like, olive oil and beeswax and chickweed,
right.
Comfrey, plantain, camphor, wintergreen, you know, eucalyptus oil, pine oil, all this stuff. And so it's real safe to use compared to some of the other things that will dry your skin out and stuff, you know, to deal with. And you can use it for poison ivy or oak or sumac or insect bites, you know, as well, bee stings or burns, you know, anything, dry skin. And but the big news here is, and I go way back with my dog on this situation, because I used to know at Delilah's Pet Shop. I was friends with all those guys, and
yeah,
she told me about that. She used to have a this is Karen, that the woman that owns it.
Yep.
She
know her well. Yeah, we used to take the dog there all the time.
Oh yeah, and she had a website called myitchydog.com. It's probably still up.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And when I talked to her about it, and I've had my dog since 2008, so he's getting up there. And she would say, you know, it's 99% nutrition and not, you know, mange and some of the things. It doesn't mean that they can't get mange or some of those things, depending on how well you take care of your dog. But what I've noticed was I have always given him really good food. I spend a little bit more money on the, you know, the more just better food. I mean, she usually says when she would have a dog come in that was itchy, it would, and this would be itchy all year round kind of thing. They'd be getting Old Roy or something, you know, like the cheapest dog food that you could get at
Kroger,
you know, or whatever. And, you know, when I never had that problem because I've always fed him really good. And now I feed him, I make his own food. And, you know, dogs need mainly to be eating meat, you know, and that's what they're used to. But because a dog has been involved with humans for so many years and domesticated, they do kind of need a few other things that are good for them, and including vegetables and fruits and things. So whenever I make my food, I add just a little bit of oatmeal. I cook up some oatmeal and put it in a bag. Keep all these together.
Yep.
I get one of those packets of the organic chicken breasts. They're usually around $10 for 5 or 6 of them that you'll see in Kroger. And, you know, I just boil those up and then put them in bags and freeze some and then pull them out. And I give them some chicken along with, as the main thing. And then, you know, maybe a little peas and carrots or something like that, green beans and carrots. You got to look up and make sure you're not giving them anything that they shouldn't be having. Like, I can go through that in a minute, but, it's really great. He doesn't really have a lot of, you know, problems with his skin, and he's always eaten very well. But what I noticed was it always happens in the summer when it gets hot, and I also give him, you know, you know, the flea and tick medicine and that sort of thing. So he's not getting bit that way.
Right.
But man, those, as soon as the chiggers get out and stuff, they'll die, but they get him, you know, they'll bite him first. And
of course,
right on his butt, you know, above his tail, he'll get these scabs going because he sits there and bites at it, you know, and
sure he does.
He can't really scratch it because it's, you know, on his back. But I got this old time chickweed salve that, and I just had we had had it in the bathroom, and I put it in. I just started putting some on his, and it just clears it up immediately. I mean, within about a week. And he had a really bad spell of itching like a few weeks back, and I was getting bit too, you know, with chiggers. And I just want to recommend that to anybody because it's organic. It doesn't hurt them. They don't seem to like it, so they kind of start leaving it alone. But it also is soothing.
Thing, isn't it? I mean, half the things we put on them, they just lick off.
Right, and you got to worry about that, you know. But this stuff, it might be the camphor or the wintergreen or, you know, the eucalyptus or whatever's in it that they just don't really like to lick on, but it kind of stops them from licking. And I think it does give them a little bit of relief of the, you know, just the itching and that kind of thing. But,
well, with that many aliphatic oils, I'm sure it went rancid. You know, those things need to be prepared and used fresh. It doesn't take more than probably, depending on how it's stored and what kind of heat, just a few months will make most of those, you know, my old chemistry days.
Yeah.
Those aliphatic bonds will break and the oils will go rancid. But that sounds like a great formula.
It is. It's like $15. And yeah. It lasts at least a year. So
where'd you get that?
I got it on Amazon.
Okay.
If you just look up chickweed salve, you know, SALVE, Amish Origins or something like that, it was called.
Yeah.
I can't remember.
Well, there's, you know, we've got a Great Pyrenees, and they are notorious for having difficult skin.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it really is variable to the food that we feed our dog.
Yeah.
Over the years, we've looked at feed formulas, where they were made. And the last we looked, which has been a couple of years, there were only two dog foods in America that were made in America and not at some Chinese cement factory / baby milk / pesticide /
yeah.
Dog food factory. And that makes a huge difference. Not only the quality of the ingredients, I mean, certain animals can't digest denatured protein.
Right.
The classic example is horses.
Yeah.
You know, horses can digest denatured protein. So you can feed hay to a horse that's just burn up nasty old grass that looks like it's been on fire, whereas cattle cannot digest denatured protein. Mm-hmm. So cattle have to have hay that's not burn up and dried out and too much sun on it. And, you know, animals are like that. And the food that you get, depending on where it is and what the source is, you know, all the protein can be denatured. It's probably some cheap byproduct of some process that somebody says, hey, we can feed this to dogs.
Right.
Well, that's how dog food comes about. And, you know, that's the worst thing in the world for your dog and their skin. So
yeah.
We've had, you know, issues over the years and changed dog foods many, many times. And, you know, we're spending a little bit more money for this brand that is made here in the U.S. Of known provenance for the sourcing of what they put in it. And it's made a big difference. Our Great Pyrenees have not had near the skin problems as they have in the past. And it looks like you'd believe that it was bacteria or fungal related. Mm-hmm. It's red, it's inflamed. I mean, if you were a dermatologist, you'd look at that and go, oh, yeah. Put some cortisone on it, and it'll get better. It doesn't, because the source of the problem just keeps going into their stomach every day unless you fix it. So we'll try some of that, though. I like that, the chickweed salve. I'd seen that before many years ago and hadn't seen it since, so I didn't know that it was even still around.
Yeah, you can get it on Amazon, and I tell you, it's almost been I'd say 4 or 5 years before that, it seemed as he got older, he had more of a problem with this, but, you know, he would certainly get bit and start itching, and, I mean, it was at one point, he was like Thumper, the rabbit, it was just like all day long, you know, scratching and stuff, and once I started using that stuff, I tell you what, even on the scabs that form, you know, from them biting it would even just go away.
Yeah.
I mean, within a week or so.
That's pretty remarkable.
I was like, damn, I've tried many different things, including going to the vet and getting expensive stuff, you know, that you've put on there. But this seems to be something that really, really works for dogs. And, you know, I hate to be held to that, but I'm thinking, you know, it's over the counter. It's just basically,
a home remedy for the most part.
It really is. And so I don't see any problem with mentioning that. And, but try that. It's a good thing to have around. It's good for your own like stings or anything you get.
I'm going to get some, and I'm going to look at the formula, and I'm going to make some up, here myself. So, that sounds like a great idea. It's too bad we're not live. I know we get a ton of phone calls about everybody's little pet fear for their dogs. Everybody's got them, and I always love hearing from people about, you know, what they're doing with their pets to cure their minor little problems.
It is
not, I mean, of course, healthcare in general, of course, is expensive. Going to the vet has become positively mind-blowing.
Oh yeah.
It is not a inexpensive proposition.
Yeah, and it's kind of like, you know, basic medicine in this country is a real problem. You know what I mean? It's just expensive everywhere, but if you do a little bit of preventative maintenance for the dogs, that's something that's going to really help them. And I think nutrition's all about it. You know, lately when I make him, if I buy some blueberries or strawberries or anything like that, I wash them off real good. I kind of cut off the outside, at least on a strawberry. And I don't put a lot of it in there, you know, maybe just, I'd say, like with a blueberry. I mean, he's a dachshund, so he's small, but five or six of those, and mix them in with everything. And so he's getting a little fruit. And I used to put sweet potato. I still do that. I kind of move that around. Like, I don't give it to him constantly, but I'll give him a little sweet potato. And then when I don't, I've got, I started using, well, I was using rice for a while, but I'd get the brown rice, but I've heard that that may possibly be something that they don't deal with very well with their digestion.
Yeah, they don't digest it quite as well.
No.
But, you know, the fruit is loaded, especially blueberries, loaded with antioxidants. And I think if there's anything that dogs benefit from, it's from probiotics and antioxidants. Because like you said, they don't get that really from anywhere.
Right.
Certainly not getting it from most of their foods. And even, you know, the regular food that we feed ourselves don't have a lot of antioxidants or probiotics in them. So they benefit from that pretty significantly. The sweet potatoes are great for them. They love sweet potatoes, and I think there's a lot of benefit to feeding those. We do that regularly with our Great Pyrenees.
And I put some carrots. I'll cook up a little bit of carrot just so it gets in enough where you can mash it. And I think that that's really good for their eyes, and, you know, obviously, but it's good for, it's another good vegetable to have for dogs. And I think with a little bit of the fruit and everything, he just loves it. And it's also kind of a interesting way to bond with them, because it's like, okay, he'll let me know about 3:30 in the afternoon, you know, time to eat.
Hey, exactly. Wait a minute. What's for dinner here?
Right. And then I'll, you know, pull everything out. I got it in a container in the fridge, but I started using oatmeal. I had read that it's really good for them, and I put about a tablespoon of oatmeal in with everything too. And you know, I cook it up so it's already, you know, mashed and everything.
Yeah.
And a little bit of oatmeal, a little bit of fruit, just a little bit of some kind of vegetable like carrots, and like I said, peas are really good. You can grind them up and put them in with the carrots, and then the rest, you know, whatever kind of meat you want, and you can kind of move that around a little bit. He doesn't seem to mind. But
Mrs. B feeds Morgan Cheerios instead of oatmeal.
Yeah.
She puts Cheerios in there, and you can tell when she wants it and when she doesn't want it.
Right.
You know, and she'll, when she needs it and when she wants it, she'll eat it. Otherwise it'll just sit there until she does. But that's, I think there is a lot to that, there's something in oats that's valuable to them, that they seem to eat really well. I'm not certain that the cheap oats that you get out of most commercials, brands of dog food,
right,
are probably as good as that. So I think I'm sure that's why you do it and why we do as well. Use a better source of oats, but it certainly makes a difference. If we weren't doing that, you know, our dog would be have a lot more trouble with the skin. And like I said, Pyrenees are prone to that anyway.
Mine's a popcorn lover.
Yeah.
And whenever we make popcorn, you know, I set some aside so there's no salt or butter or anything on it, you know, just straight popcorn. And he just gobbles that up. He loves it. He's got to sit there and, you know, you just toss one out on the floor and he'll go after it. So that's kind of
the same thing with Morgan. She will eat popcorn. You know, we'll throw it out for the birds.
Mm-hmm.
If we've got some sitting there that we haven't eaten after a day,
right,
it'll get thrown out for the birds. And of course, Morgan will walk right over and eat all of it before the birds ever get there.
Yeah. I'd like to, you know, the funny thing about mine, I don't know why we ended up talking about dogs, but, he's never liked biscuits of any shape, form, anything. And most dogs just love them, you know. But when he was a puppy, I remember I had him in the car and I drove up to the bank window, you know, drive up. And the lady saw him and, oh, he's so cute. And then she gave him a little, I guess she had, you know, a little dog treats in there and a little dog biscuits. And she gave him one. And I gave it to him. And I remember he just looked at her and then spit it out.
That's so funny.
And she's like, what happened? I said, well, I guess he doesn't like them. And he never has. I used to buy them and then it'd just go to waste. You know, he wouldn't eat them. But he loves those. I make a little dried jerky, you know, out of various things. You don't want to feed them bacon. Apparently bacon and a lot of pork stuff is not really the best for dogs. But I make like a little chicken sort of, you know, just dried up chicken stuff, but I don't put, you know, all the stuff that we like, you know, like teriyaki or something like that, because it's got too much salt. You really don't want to give them any salt.
Right. No, they don't need it.
Yeah.
You know, Morgan will eat bacon grease when Victoria fries up a bunch of bacon.
Mm-hmm.
There'll be bacon grease and she'll let it cool and pour it on the food, and she loves that. She goes crazy over that, but we don't ever feed her bacon or ham or anything that salty. She doesn't get much pork at all, come to think of it. She doesn't like biscuits really either. The UPS driver will come by and drop a couple of biscuits out, and you know, she'll look at them and she'll just leave them there.
Yeah.
So she's not much of a biscuit eater either. She loves pot pies. You know, if if Victoria makes pot pies, those little cheap pot pies you get at the store, she'll do an extra one for the dog and crunch it up in her food, and she loves it. Boy, she goes crazy over those turkey pot pies.
Well, as I said earlier, and I probably ought to mention it, there are some bad things for dogs. You don't want to feed them grapes and raisins, nothing like that. No. They will give them kidney failure. Macadamia nuts are something that that seems to poison them. And so you don't want to give them nuts. Bacon, you know, I don't really know why, but I think it said that they can cause pancreatitis and... because there's problems with, it's more the organisms that are in the dog that get messed up by it, and possibly also because it's too salty and seasoned. But apple cores are not good. You can, if you want to feed them apple, that's fine. You know, I usually take the skin off and just put a little, I can chop a little bit of that up with his food too, and he loves that. Mushrooms are not good for a dog. Avocado is really bad for a dog.
Yeah.
Milk and dairy, bad for a dog, although they can eat some cheese a little bit, but just got to take it, you know, give it to them as a treat. Don't really give it to them.
You don't want to be feeding them a wheel of cheese. That wouldn't be good.
Yeah. Rhubarb, not good for them. Anything with caffeine in it. Onion and garlic, you want to stay away from. You don't want to have supplements that contain iron. That seems to be real bad for them. I heard that messes up their liver and kidneys from, just make sure they don't take vitamin supplements. You know, some people think that it's good to do, but it's really not. Pits, raw meat and bones can be bad, even though some people are really into the raw meat thing. The bones can get stuck in their throat and that kind of thing. So you got to kind of watch for that. You definitely don't want to give them things with large amounts of citrus. Citrus seems to be pretty bad for them. Like coconut's bad. Nuts in general are probably not the greatest thing. You don't want to have anything that's moldy or yeasty, you know, like dough or that kind of thing. Chocolate, of course. Yeah.
Chocolate, yeah, it's the real bad one. We had a Great Pyrenees, in fact, the first one we ever had, the first female. You know, there's, you know, the food situation is a serious one. For most people with, especially long-haired dogs, it seems like, anymore. I'd love to hear that. We'll have to get on that. We'll push forward with that and see if we can't get somebody to come in and kind of update us on all of our friends out there with dogs that they try to care for.
All right. Well, with that, we're out of time. So, that was a fun show today talking about all this stuff. And
it was.
You can call into WFHB and leave something on the message machine, and they will send it to us. So, if you do have a comment, feel free to do it that way. All right. I'll see you next week.
See y'all.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, that's all we have time for today. Inside Outdoors comes to you from the beautiful rolling hills and green forests of southern Indiana. Thanks for listening. Inside Outdoors is brought to you each week on Saturday mornings at 7 a.m. right here on your local community radio station, WFHB. If you happen to miss the show, you can listen online at wfhb.org. Just go to the public affairs listing and you'll find a podcast of our show.